In the past discussions, we saw that Lord Krishna, the teacher, tells this wonderful disciple, the disciple eager to get rid of all ignorance, and yet has many difficulties in understanding. That disciple, Arjuna, was told that you have to progress steadfastly towards this wisdom, the wisdom that the Self is ever perfect, the Self is immutable, is immortal, and the death and suffering is because of the identification with this body. The body is not I, but because of this erroneous identification with body, what happens? Whatever then happens to the body is seen as happening to me. And that is the cause of elation and depression, cause of bondage and suffering. I am always scared because I see the body changing, going towards death. And I feel because of identification that I am also then going to die. Because of association with body, there comes this mistaken notion that I was born and I am going to die. And this information that I am the Self, immutable, can be realized, can be experienced through the proper practice. There is a way to do it. The religious teachers, they give practical wisdom, not just the theoretical ideas. They are not fantasies. They tell the goal as well as the way, how that knowledge will become functional in our life. We remember that how Lord Buddha gave the message, Four Noble Truths, and the first two of them, they were partly theoretical, that yes, everything is suffering in the world. The world is full of suffering. That is the first noble truth, the noble truth regarding suffering, dukkha ariya satyam. Then the second noble truth is that yes, this suffering has a cause. There is a cause for the suffering. That is the second noble truth. What does it indicate is that this suffering is has a reason behind it. And if the reason or the cause or the root is removed, then the suffering also will go away. There is the possibility is indicated. A theoretical possibility of removal of suffering is indicated in this second noble truth. The remaining two have a practical orientation. That is there a way to remove this suffering? Is there a way? Yes, there is a way. There is a way that removes the cause. There is the third stage, that there is the state where the cause goes away, and so the effects also. And the fourth says, yes, there is the way by which you can transform your life and reach that state. And he told Arjuna, here giving this similar message, that yes, by transforming the life accordingly, you also can come to that state where all these sufferings and bondages will not be there. And that requires steadfast, unwavering practice. Long, long practice may come into picture depending on the person's nature, how much effort the person is putting in, how much effort needs to be put in, and all that will determine how much practice is necessary. It is not possible, in fact, to quantify it. So continue the practice, but as the practice proceeds, the signs of transformation are seen in life, and these signs of transformation will be in accordance with the stage where you reach that ultimate goal of realization, the ultimate goal of perfection. Those signs of perfection will start coming in as one starts progressing in spiritual disciplines. And this discipline is really not difficult. One has to keep on working steadfastly without getting swayed by success or failure, pleasure or pain. Without getting attached to any of these, one has to keep on marching on this path of performing one's duty. And thus the life will get transformed. Sometimes because the means looks very simple, one doesn't feel the conviction that this simple means will be able to bring me to the goal. We feel that we have to do something very complicated. I have to probably stand on my head instead of on my feet, or we'll have to do at least three or four fastings every month or every week. Many such ideas come. But what real practice is, that steadfastly keep on doing one's duty without getting attached to the results and without being wavered by the success or failures. Success or failures, they have to come as we work. It is a process of learning. No learning will come if failures were not there. Failures alone teach us not as much is taught by the success. Successes teach, but failures teach more. So failures are to be looked upon as the teachers. And we should like that go on. Then we saw that Arjuna's question, what are the signs of this fully realized soul, the one who is established in wisdom? The word is very nice, because Krishna had told Arjuna that make your this understanding steady. It keeps on jumping from today you feel like this, tomorrow you feel like that. It goes on jumping according to one's moods. This kind of understanding has to become steady, poised, steadfastly going towards the goal. Then this question, that when it gets established in wisdom, what happens? What happens to that person now? How does that person speak? How does that person eat? How does that person walk or talk? Does that person die? It is not necessary that the person has to die. The person may still continue to live like all of us, and yet not like all of us. The transformation comes internally and yet manifested outside in a very specific way. Sri Ramakrishna used to give a nice example that there is a sword made of iron and a touchstone which has the power to convert iron into gold. If a touchstone touches that sword, now what happens with the touch of the touchstone? The iron turns into gold. Now it has become this sword of gold. Its outer shape has remained the same, but now its value has tremendously enhanced. The internal change has taken place. Now the function of this sword also has become different. For external shape, it has remained the same. The internal content has undergone transformation. So similarly, when the life is established in wisdom, this wisdom becomes functional in life. When we are in ignorance, ignorance becomes functional in life. So this, when wisdom becomes functional, what happens? The signs of such person were asked by Arjuna, so that as a spiritual aspirant he will know that what he needs to follow. What are the signs of progress in spiritual life? They are not some peculiarities of behavior, like somebody may start growing long beard, that appear as if in India sometimes we see that the monks with long beard, and there is because that person looks very different from the others, it gives that person is seen by many as a real holy person. We had once a big program at one place in Chennai in South India. Lot of we monks were there for that program. And one of us had a long beard. All others were more or less looking otherwise similar, but this Swami had a long beard. Then all the public attention went to that Swami. He was he got all more adoration, more respect, more worship from many devotees. So we started saying amongst ourselves, hey, we also should start growing now the beard. Otherwise, look at that man. So the external signs, the physical signs, are seen sometimes as the signs of wisdom. Sri Krishna doesn't tell Arjuna like that when this person becomes wise, the horns do not grow on the head of that person. What happens actually is all the desires go away. The very beautiful verse, the words are so nice, that prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. O Arjuna, O Partha, Partha is another name of Arjuna, being son of Kunti. Kunti's one name was Pritha, and in Sanskrit, therefore, the son of this Pritha becomes Partha. So, O Partha, what happens to this person is, now this person is freed from all the desires in the mind. All desires in the mind, that person has given up completely. totally, not in the least, not even the vestige of a desire is there anymore. That is the sign. And this complementary to that, just to ward off any misunderstanding, that because of the lack of desires, now the person's behavior may be very erratic. It is, and it will be just a behavior of a mad person, or maybe if that person be without any joy in life. So to ward off that objection, Lord says that that person is full of satisfaction, contentment. That contentment doesn't depend, in the case of this person, on contacts with objects or their absence. Our pleasures, our elations and depressions depend on what I possess and what I don't possess. The sense of possessing some objects or closeness with some persons gives us a sense of happiness. One feels that if I get this man or this woman, I will be happy. Or if I get this new model of this car, I will be happy. So my happiness depends on possessing various things. In case of this person, none of this is required at all to make him or her established in happiness. That person is completely satisfied. Atmani eva atmana tushtah. That person is fully established in contentment. That contentment never goes away, whether there are some objects there or lack of them. Not bothered by that at all. Why? Because the contentment, bliss is really in the self. And that person is established there. And therefore is not worried about the secondary things around him or her. This is how the life of such a person is. These scriptures are to be studied in the life of the great sages. The sages and saints, they manifest these truths in their life. And there we see how each of these things are completely manifested. No desire to get any particular thing, and no happiness or lack of it because of any such object. There is always steady contentment in the life of that person. And the reason is told there, that why so? In ordinary persons, the identification is with body and mind. And that brings the sense of imperfection, that I am so and so, I am a Yogatmananda. That limitations are, I am identified with the limitations. And therefore I have the desires to fulfill the limitations now. I want now things in the world. I feel I am a man and I lack this and I lack that, and thus the desires come. When this identification goes away, then I know I don't lack anything. It is because of the identification this lack is. When this identification goes away, the lack of is also gone. There is no feeling of any requirement. See, just imagine, just think, this is a great meditation. Just feel, I am not the body. It is truth, friends, that we are not the body. And when we know that, even a little imagination of that will remove so many of our wants, then I do not feel that I am man or a woman. That is just the body. And thus I do not crave for the physical pleasures. I do not have the limitation of the body that I am young or old, being young or old, strong or weak, healthy or sick. And see how many our causes of suffering are there in the world just because of identification with body. All these are gone as soon as this false, erroneous, mistaken identification vanishes. And this person is now established in that unflinching satisfaction or contentment. The world cannot do anything to this person, positive or negative. Nothing is added by the world. Nothing can be subtracted by the world. It is in contrast of our life, and this needs to be understood. I was reading one nice commentary on this by one Ram Sukhdas Maharaj, and that pointed out one very beautiful connotation of this word yada. Lord Krishna said, when the person is established in wisdom, means what it indicates is that in all of us, our real nature is pure. It is only because of the temporary identification with body that we are to do all this. We have to suffer like this. And just when this identification goes away, we are free. So this is something that can happen to each of us. Just remove this identification and then you have the same freedom, same perfection as this person established in wisdom. One analogy is given like a moon reflected in wavy waters. Now, when we look at that moon reflected in wavy waters, then we see the moon dancing, and sometimes low, sometimes high. Sometimes the moon seems to be breaking into pieces also. When the waves clash and break, we see that the moon is breaking. Is anything happening to the moon really? Nothing is happening to the moon, but because we are identifying the moon with that appearance in water, and we feel this is happening to the moon. Look up and you see that nothing is happening to the moon because of the wavy waters. Similarly, nothing happens to us except because of our seeing our reflection in this world. Because of identification with matter, we suffer. And this suffering instantaneously vanishes when this identification goes away. So, Lord says that this is the condition of that person. We have to match it with our life and try to bring this understanding to us that no, I am not this body. And thus the elations and depressions, elations and depressions because of association with some pieces of matter should not come to me. Let me stay steady in this knowledge. I am the Self. The third verse of this particular discussion then says that dukheshu anudvigna mana sukheshu vigata spruha vitaraga bhaya krodha sthitadhir muniruchyate. He who is unperturbed in misery and free from desires amidst pleasures, who is devoid of all attachment, fear and anger, that sage is said to be of steady wisdom. In fact, it is said in Sanskrit language this beauty is there. It is not easy to translate all those connotations into English. This beautiful idea that that person who has this kind of life is called a sage. It is not just that this person is a sage because of something else. This person, this life is the life of sage, that are not affected by the so-called pleasures and pains associated with the body. Because that knowledge is there that I am not the body after all, it doesn't affect me. Like a person, say, acting in a movie, and in the movie the person is, falls sick, and so has to act sick. Now, the person may act really, do all that moaning and pain, but knows inside that it is all acting, is really not affected by any of those things, because is very certain that this is, I am unaffected by all these. The relative pleasures and pains because of the possessing of the body will come in that person's life as well. Never, don't let us fall into this mistake that this person will then have always affluence in family, no calamity will fall in his life, there will be no sickness, no disease, no friends. And all that will come as much as, if not more, in the life of this person as well. This person will fall sick as any other person falls sick. He or she will get viral infections, will also have, you will see such person also will be taking flu shots. If he is suffering from blood pressure, will take medication for that. Let us not fall into the trap that this person does not get any of those things. In the wake of depression, this person also may lose his or her job. Not that because this person is established in wisdom, will never lose his job or will have no financial difficulties. All those financial problems, everything that is associated with the body will be seen outwardly in that person's life as well. But where is the difference then? His awareness will not get affected by that. His wisdom will not get affected by that. Just to illustrate this point, that Swami Vivekananda has narrated a story that, suppose, he says it is in the Inspired Talks. One day a mosquito sat on the horn of a big bull. And then after a while, the mosquito started feeling a prick in the conscience that I am probably troubling the bull too much, and started telling the bull, "Oh bull, I am sorry for giving you all this trouble. Here I fly away, be peaceful now." Well, what the bull would say, "I had been, whether you sit there or you fly there, what, I am not concerned at all. You don't, even if you sit there with whole of your family, it doesn't cause me any botheration. Even if you fly away, it doesn't give me any particular relief." So that is how this person is in the world. Whatever comes doesn't add anything to that person. And whatever goes doesn't diminish anything from that person. See, this is the great thing that we need to follow in our life too, by reminding ourselves that the world will bring its own things in life. Let us not get affected by them. And I have seen so many people, not only the monks, but many householder devotees, having practiced this kind of discipline for years and years, come to this kind of understanding that yes, after all, these things come in life, the loss of dear ones come in life, some misfortune comes in life, but the inner awareness that God alone is, that does not get disturbed, their behavior does not get wavered by these things. They remain steady. So, because the consciousness is relatively free from body, to the extent we can free our awareness from I am the body and tie it to I am the self, we will see these things happening in our life too. So this is the sign of progress, that dukkheshu anudvigna mana, that the mind will remain unperturbed, not irritated by whatever relative miseries come in life, misfortunes come in life, and sickness can be there, a loss of property can be there, all these things come and go. This person remains unperturbed, does not start screaming against others, does not start blaming others, does not show any signs of being perturbed. It is very important to have this attitude that life will have all these things coming and going. Those things from which we feel we have derived lot of pleasures, those very things, those very persons are bound to bring as much, if not more, misery also in our life. A person of steady wisdom understands this. And therefore, when those things come carrying pleasures, he is not interested in them, because knows that pleasure is automatically going to be followed by pain. And so is not interested in pleasure, and therefore doesn't have to suffer the pain either. Our lives, just see, it is just the life of swings, going from one end to another end. Ha, hoo, wow, so nice. It is, this is the life of a common person, unestablished in wisdom. When established in wisdom, this vanishes completely. It is when we read the life of Sri Ramakrishna, and we can see these things very palpably. Any such great person, you can see the life, and then we will see that how this is just the translation, these words only indicate what the life of such person is. We can read the life of Buddha, life of Jesus, life of any great saint from any religion. We will see that these wonderful signs are there, not interested in the accumulation of worldly things. And why we are interested in them? Because we feel that they are going to bring happiness to my life. And we keep on accumulating them, and then that becomes a habit. Even though we know that they become the source of suffering, still, because of the force of habit, we cannot give up the tendency to accumulate more and more. And how many times have we seen this happening in one's own life, that we accumulated many things feeling that they will bring so much of comfort and happiness in life? And how many times we just said, why did I get all these things in my house, and they are now becoming a big burden? It is bound to happen, friends, because we keep, we deposit our happiness in these things. And there is no happiness in them, so as a reaction what we get is suffering. So, Lord says that this dukkheshu anudvigna, when suffering comes, that person is not irritated or disturbed by those miseries and sufferings, and is not desirous of any pleasures either. Sukheshu vigata spruha, that is gone from that person's life. Well, we have the desire for pleasure because we don't have it. And the desire is only for those things which we don't have. And for that which we already have, how can we have desire for that? Because we don't have happiness, we crave for it. And this person has happiness now, so where is the craving for happiness there? No further craving for happiness in this person's life. Whatever the person has become happiness now. So, and the effects, other effects also are told, very important effects. What other things go away from life? Vita. Vita means gone. What these three things? Raga, bhaya, krodha. Raga means attachment. The attachment to things is gone. We have somehow the feelings, and it is very difficult to eradicate them without this steady practice. That certain things belong to me, this is mine, this is mine. And when, because of some associations we feel, this is my son, and this is my daughter, this is my husband, and this is my wife, and this is my so-and-so. This is, we make such connections. But now the association is always subject to breakage. Everything that comes together has to break. And therefore, well, we suffer when it breaks because we feel attached. This is mine. When really nothing is mine, when we analyze, therefore this man is called Muni. The English translation is difficult again. Muni means the one who is deeply thoughtful. Mananashilaha means the one who ponders deeply over the nature of the things. When one ponders over what is mine, You know that nothing is mine. It is only because we are not thoughtful, because we don't pay thought to it, and we have this terribly wrong idea that something belongs to me. Well, and thus we get attached or suffer because of it. So, this person has no such idea that something belongs to me, and thus it has no attachment. No attachment, doesn't consider something to be mine. And let us remember this, friends. Nothing is mine. And when we think, we understand it. But since we do not guide our behavior by our understanding, our behavior goes according to this mistaken notions, not according to understanding, but because of misunderstanding. Our behavior should be based on understanding, deep thinking about the nature of the things. And then it is easy to see that nothing is mine. And when nothing is mine, I don't get attached to them. So, it is very important to inculcate this thought that nothing in this world is mine. And thus, that freedom from attachment will automatically come. It is, nothing is mine. Let me not feel attachment for any object. What happens, we see that as the association with objects come, we get involved. We feel that things are mine and feel that they are going to stay with us all the time. But no, the nature of the things is that whatever comes together has to again get separated. Integration is followed by disintegration. Every integration has to be followed by the disintegration too. And thus, because of attachment, we therefore feel terrible pangs, because we don't want to give it up. It has to go, friends. It has to go. And not only our attachment to some persons because of body, like somebody is my son, is an attachment because of the body. What is the son? A biological connection is there, a physical connection is there. So you feel that some heap of flesh and blood is my son. Now what happens there? Even if you try to hold on to it, it won't, even after a while, this what you called I, that body is also not going to stay with you, let alone the secondary connection with that body. This body also you cannot hold on to indefinitely, it is subject to death. You have to give it up, it will be snatched away. And because of attachment, then there is so much of fear about it too. So that is the next thing, bhaya, fear. This person is free from attachments and therefore free from fear also. No fear. Our life is full of fear. What will happen tomorrow, whether my job will remain or not, whether my house will remain or not, whether I will be struck by some disease or not, whether there is a possibility of cancer to me or not. Keep on worrying our heads, all fear, so much of fear in life. That is the characteristic of a person who is ignorant. This person has nothing to lose and so nothing to fear of. There is absolutely no fear in this person. It is not that this person is very bold. this fear, fearlessness is not the worldly fearlessness. Some people in the world are very fearless in the relative sense, and some are comparatively coward. This is not related to that. Some person, that person can go easily to war, who is relatively fearless. Hey, doesn't matter, I will go. There is an adventurous spirit in them. They can easily go to some dangerous mission, that let me climb that Mount Rainier or whatever, I will go for that mountain climbing, no matter what happens, I am going to take the risk. And thus, that some people are like that. That is a relative boldness. They want to be special from that point of view. Some people are more conservative, and they remain there, live their life saying, no, no, I don't want to take chances. It is, but this, in both these cases, that fearlessness is not because the person is completely beyond fear, but wants to show the boldness. Hey, I can do this. The spiritual fearlessness is not like this. The spiritual fearlessness is because that person sees that there is nothing to fear. One example that I give often about that is that if you see the snake, then some people who are scared of the snakes, and they will go away. I don't want to go there, it's a snake, you know. Some people are bold and say, what does the snake do? Nothing, you know. I am not scared of the snake. They go away. They go towards the snake. They don't worry about it. But both of them have this idea that it is the snake. Some are bolder than others, that's all. It is, even the person who is bold and then goes, has some extra palpitation comes in the heart. Maybe the other snakes didn't bite me, but this may prove to be otherwise. So there is some lurking fear there also. But when somebody knows that it is rope, it is not snake, then what is the nature of that fearlessness, friends? That person has absolutely no fear at all. Because rope doesn't bite. It is like this in this world too. When we know that it is really the self, I am neither born nor I am going to die. This whole world that I see is just the projection of my brain. It is the creation of the brain, creation of the mind, that is how it is projected. It is a nice study to see that how the autistics perceive the world. Very interesting to see how what we consider to be very important and give lot of priority, the perception there is different because the brain is different. The idea is this, not that what we perceive is real and what they perceive is unreal. Both perceptions are creations of different brains. And who is to tell what is the right way of working of the brain? It is because many people have, many of the human beings, they behave one way, we consider that to be the right behavior. But it is not truth, it is a convention, that's all. There is this nice story that a king knew that one well in his palace was a forbidden well. The water of that well was not to be drunk at all, because there was in the family tradition it was said that Whosoever drinks this water of this well becomes insane. So he was not drinking the water of that well, and nobody was allowed to go near that well. But it so happened that there was terrible drought in his kingdom, and people came to him and said that, well, that well seems to be full of water. Now other wells have dried up. So let us start drinking that well. The king told, let us face some hardship for a few more days. The rainy season is at hand. And so after a while, things will be all right. But if you drink the water of that well and become insane, we will all be... The people said, no, that is, we don't need to believe that. Let us start drinking water from that well. And they started drinking water from that well. The king, having more faith in the tradition, did not drink the water. But then everybody started behaving in a different way. Their brains became different. They started behaving different way. And they thought now that the king is insane. Oh my goodness, our king, you know, our dear king, he has now, has my mental problems now. So the king thought, now what to do, let me also drink the water. Okay. Because what is a conventional behavior is considered the correct behavior. Others then are called abnormal. Abnormal doesn't, it sounds bad. Abnormal behavior. Abnormal means not different from normal, not like normal. It is different from normal, that's all. It need not be considered to be specifically bad. Sometimes the behavior that is above normal, somebody told me that this word is to be actually construed like this. Abnormal is above normal, superior to normal. That is, it is. So, therefore, this person is not attached to anything, no fear, therefore, and another thing is no anger either. Vitarag bhaya krodha. Anger also vanished from that person's life. Cannot get angry, in principle cannot get angry with anybody. Because whom to get angry with? The same self everywhere. So no possibility of getting angry towards somebody. That possibility of anger is eradicated. So this becomes the life of such person. And we shall continue to discuss more such signs of the person of steady wisdom, so that we can also consciously and conscientiously march on that path to imbibe those signs in our life too. Any questions? Yes, Donna? Ah, very good question. What is the answer? Does that person love or not? Can that person love or not? What is the answer? What? Yes, Mike?
I think he can.
He can love or cannot love?
He can
love. How do you love without attachment? Can love be there without attachment? In fact, the lesser the attachment, more the love.
Well, wait a minute. How can you love your child like you love them with your heart and soul?
Yes.
I feel like they're my possession. They're not mine. I know that. But like spiritually, I just love them. You know.
Oh.
You just don't, you don't want them to be hurt or anything, you know?
Well, it is only because you consider them to be yours, you feel
no,
that
I
they...
No, I know they're not mine.
Ah, otherwise why don't you feel the same thing about every other creature?
Because I know they're on such a deep level, I don't know her that way.
Ah,
the more,
that
the
is...
you know someone, the more connected you
that, become,
and
that is... All those words which are using, you are using, are the alternatives of attachment, alternatives of considering mine. It is, the love actually is much more when there is less of attachment. What happens because of attachment is, we start imposing our ideas on our children. What I think is good for me, I imagine that thing must be good for my child also. That is why so many conflicts come in the homes. That the parents think that no, this is good for my child, otherwise my child will come to harm. The children have different ideas. It is you think that they are yours, and that is why.
No, see, I cannot let my kids make their decisions. I don't feel the need to do that. I mean, I speak my mind.
I
do that.
Ah.
But I mean,
yeah.
But I feel, like right here in my heart, I feel love for
them. Feel love for them.
Even when they piss me off, I feel love for them.
Well. very good. So continue to feel love for them.
Yes.
But don't get attached. That is the secret, you know. It is, keep on loving. And how not get attached? You don't get attached unless you feel that they are yours.
You're talking like a politician.
Okay. These days what happens is something appeals to somebody, then says that it is you are talking like politician, because they speak in such an appealing way. Whenever you listen to any of them, you feel that, hey, that person is speaking the right. So it is not like that. It is the love is very important in life. In fact, the attachment is an impediment in love. The love frees us. Attachment binds us. And the love makes us fearless. Attachment makes us fearful. It is when there is attachment, there is the sense of mine, whether you express it or don't express it. That idea of somehow connected with me, that idea doesn't go away in this ordinary, what passes for love. In attachments, it is all mine. It is all for me. The others are only what I can say is the excuses for that. You look upon them as extension, like kids. The mothers look upon them as extension of their bodies. So it is like that. It just as this body, one is so attached to it, that similarly the attachment for the children also is of that level. It has become so grassified with children that the word, you say that they are not mine, it is true, because the word mine is true, is really a very mild expression. It has become really like I, just as the body is not even felt as mine, it is felt as I. Like, I am giving the talk. It is just the body that is talking, but I feel I am giving the talk. Similarly, what is so much close to our body we feel not even mine, but I myself, so to say. So, that is not really love, but a very gratified attachment. It needs to be removed through this practice. It is very difficult and painful for our ears to hear it. But if we see the reactions, we will be able to see what is attachment and what is love. We don't have a lot of time to discuss this topic. There will come again and again occasions to discuss this attachment and love thing. You can understand some of it very easily if you read Swami Vivekananda's book on Bhakti Yoga. There is a nice chapter there titled Triangle of Love. And there is a nice description and separation between attachment and love. Yes, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I just caught what you said about the body, giving the speech. It's a transmitter. It's filtering the knowledge from your education and from your intuition and from the universe and things like that.
Well, that is. If I am wise, then I will feel like that. But if I am ignorant, it doesn't come. The mind also is a transmitter. Body also is a transmitter. It is the knowledge is beyond that. It is percolating through the body mind instrument. And when I have that wisdom functional in me, and then I won't consider that I am body. But when that wisdom is not there, I am not that wise, I am not there yet. So I feel I am giving the lecture. But with your blessings, I will march there slowly, slowly. You're welcome. You want to say something?
Love would be that which directs another soul towards God in any other action, like trying to make them happy or please them, which is actually driving them away, is born of the selfishness or the possessiveness.
Oh, well, that is a good indicator. Did you could all hear what he said? That is very important criterion too. Very good. Yes, please.
I have a very difficult time letting go of attachments to people, places, and things. And I realize that I have to stop someplace when I'm trying to let go of the attachments I have to my thoughts, because that's what leads me to having attachments to people, places, and things. So I started at a very low level, and it seems to be working.
That is
my thoughts. I realize that they're not me. That's my dad observer piece. And it's very interesting. I like it. I don't know when I'm going to progress to giving up attachments to people, places, and things. But this is where I am now, and it seems to be working.
Very good. That is a good idea. It is, nobody is at a very high level and need not think like that. It is, we all have to work from where we are, and it is sometimes not even felt that we are attached to our thoughts. In fact, therefore the thoughts are called our brainchild, brain children. And there is more attachment to them, more attachment than the physical children. Physical children are comparatively outer, and the brain children, that is our thoughts, they are far more invasive. So therefore, getting rid of the attachment of our brain children, that is our thoughts, is rather more difficult it is good that we should do that. Yes, Eric?
How about people that murder their children, like the babies and people who just believe that sort of thing? They're clearly not attached. There are people on this planet that are not attached to humanity. So they do some very heinous things. How do you account for that in terms of the ego and its dislodgement?
Firstly, they do heinous things not because they are not attached, because they are terribly attached. It is not that they commit those crimes because they are not attached to them. They are attached to them, but because they did not, those things which do not do the right, what they want to do, the anger wails there. And thus, in spite of attachment, or rather because of attachment, those heinous crimes are made. We will come to that, you know, that particular thing is discussed here in the coming few verses. That another, after two more verses, that exactly that topic is going to come. That how attachment gradually becomes so congealed, and then it automatically leads into anger. Therefore, it is a very common experience, and I have alluded to that very often here, that those whom you love most, sometimes you get angry with them most. Why so? Not because of lack of attachment. Why? The other day one lady was complaining that, look, my husband becomes sometimes so angry with me, out of his mind becomes, with other people he is very fine. But with me he gets terribly angry every now and then. For no reason. With reason or no reason, the point is this. That then when that anger crosses a certain threshold, then the murderous acts or violent acts take place. It is not because of lack of attachment, but because of a very intense attachment. The love that is born of attachment has this automatic outcome. Anger also is there because of that. Yes, love you to death. Yeah. Like you love ice cream, so you eat ice cream, you know. Finish the ice cream because you love it. So you love somebody to finish that person. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. गीता सुगीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्र विस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतम् एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।